Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
All right, welcome back. Thursday night and Off the Ball, 7:30. John Giles live in studio. Good evening.
Evening, Nathan.
And you're going to stick with us for the evening as well for the football show, yes, because we have live football rarely for a Thursday night. Wolves against Liverpool coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get to that. Yep. I do briefly want to touch on the news here at home in the last few hours. Niall Quinn has taken on the role as the FAI's interim deputy chief executive. There's been quite a few changes in the last week or so with the independent directors coming on board, with a new interim CEO, and it sounds as though that the bailout that they desperately need from the government, UEFA, is going to come from the government, is going to come at some stage next week. Mm. Niall Quinn, he's talked the talk. Is this him walking the walk?
Well, he'd have to do it now if he's coming in, Nathan. And what I remember of Niall, and I think the other lad that he's in there, was beforehand when they were talking about, investment for the League of Ireland. To be quite honest, I was never in favour of that, because I think more money should be going to the schoolboys actually than the League of Ireland itself. But that's only my opinion on it. And I mean, what we really need in there now is a top businessman, you know.
Yeah, so I think they probably have that. So Roy Barrett, who's gone in as the chairman of the independent directors, MD at Goodbody Stockbrokers, who is at the very top of business in this country.
Yeah, well, obviously with an interest in football, which I'm sure he's had, but you know, when Niall was talking early on about what they were going to do and the meetings they had, I couldn't say I was in favour of that, because they were talking about investment for the League of Ireland and conditions. I mean, I was in the League of Ireland myself, and there's some great people and great clubs in it. But it's the attraction. I mean, what I heard before was the attractor was going, we're going to build, increase the quality of the stadiums and that. But I mean, where people go to watch football is on the pitch, you know.
Yeah, as someone who tries to bring their kids to League of Ireland matches, like the infrastructure, the stadiums, of them are shambles. It's actually putting people off going to games, regardless of the quality, which I think has improved. People won't go because the facilities aren't there, and you can hop down to Leinster where you'll get them.
Yeah, well, I agree that you have to improve the... I'm not so sure that people won't go if the quality's there. Mm. I think they would, actually. I think if you could build the best stands in the world, and the quality on the pitch is not good, people are not going to go. That's my opinion about it. And I think the only way to get the quality on the pitch is, as they've done in this country for years and years and years in the history of the club, is that you get the League of Ireland gets the players from the school
from
boys.
From the schoolboy clubs. Yeah.
School boys. I know there is now some of the Shelbourne, taking over some of the...
Yeah, you've got the National Leagues where the League of Ireland clubs are basically taking over from the traditional schoolboy clubs.
Yeah, but the emphasis is on the League of Ireland clubs, you know? Like, if you produce them, the school boys, then they go to League of Ireland clubs anyway, you know?
Well, the strategy at the moment is that because we have these 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s leagues with the League of Ireland clubs in, and that the Kevin's, Home Farm, Belvoir, they're all the feeder clubs into those, which is obviously a different way to doing things, and has been quite controversial.
But if you look back over the years, all the international players that we've had have come from Stella Maris, our Home Farm, Kevin's, Joey's, all these leading clubs. Do you know what I mean? That's where they've come from. It's not they haven't come from the League of Ireland, because they've come from, like in my time, Tony Dunn was a schoolboy player. He wasn't that good at 15, 16, and then he went to Shelbourne and went to Manchester, and he was one of the great players. Mm. But he'd come through that system. That's only my take on it. Yeah. I mean, whoever comes in, I wish them all the best and hope it succeeds. But
I guess ideally it doesn't need to be one or the other, and whatever money they're working off, it's not going to be massive over the next few years. And something else they've spoken about, I think, which probably ties into that, is trying to create a scenario where actually clubs in Ireland are getting a better fee for their players when they do go to England, and that could all then trickle down.
Well, that's a help, obviously, but you won't get the players in the schoolboy clubs unless you concentrate in putting the resources
into the
schoolboy clubs. You know, the League of Ireland in this country is the top level, you know, but they never have produced the young players. And I know there are different systems now where the schoolboys are attached to the clubs now. But from what I see of it, some of the schoolboy clubs have better facilities than some of the League of Ireland clubs.
No, there's no doubt there's a risk to what they're doing, and that's,
well,
that's,
I mean, good luck to them. I wouldn't necessarily be in favour. That's all. That's just my opinion on it, Nathan.
Right, we'll see what happens over the coming months and years.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, I hope whatever happens, it works, and we improve whatever needs to be improved.
We'll get on to Liverpool then, and we'll talk a lot more about the game with Wolves, and we'll get on to the Manchester United game as well. I know you were watching the football over the last couple of nights, and Manchester United beaten by Burnley. Somehow they're still fifth in the Premier League table, but an eighth defeat, seven of them against teams from 10th down, and the defeat to Liverpool as well. Like, last night wasn't a smash and grab by Burnley. It seemed like as straightforward a win as you'd ever have at Old Trafford. It seems to be getting worse rather than better.
Well, it's not getting any better, Nathan, that's for sure. I mean, it wasn't as if Manchester United were attacking all the time or were unlucky and had great chances. The fact is they didn't. You know, Burnley had to defend in the second half, as we saw, but they defended quite comfortably, really. And I mean, they're a hard working side, Burnley, but they wouldn't be. They're certainly not up there with the top boys. So it was poor for Manchester United, there's no doubt. And I mean, no, Rashford is injured, but it's not getting any better. Mm. That's for sure.
Do they have the players?
So
Pochettino is obviously the name that comes up again and again. Mm. If there was no investment coming and he was to step in the next couple of weeks, could a different manager do more with that group of players?
They probably could do a bit more, but it wouldn't. I don't think it'd be good enough to challenge, for the big trophies, as we've seen Manchester United in the past. There's still a lot to be done. I mean, they have bought a few players in, Nathan, as we saw. Do you know what I mean? They've been some...
They've generally done quite well, Wan-Bissaka, Maguire and...
Williams.
Daniel James,
a good player.
And Williams come in.
But they should be... They shouldn't be the best players. Mm. You know, what the ideal situation as a football club is to bring youth in to join the older players, and they bring them on. You know, now it's the young players who are probably the best players. It's not balanced in that particular way.
So a lot of their better results have been against the top teams when they don't have a lot of the ball and they catch them on the counter-attack. But the results against teams in the bottom half where they have possession and they just don't seem to know what to do with it. Like, have you ever seen a Manchester United team so poor in midfield?
Not for a long time. But you have to go back to how it's set up, right? And it has to be, in a club, there has to be a balance to where the top people are to relate to what the manager wants. The main thing in any football club, and should be the main person, is the manager. I don't think Solskjaer is the main man in the football club, not by a long chalk. So they have a transfer policy at the moment, and they have brought some young fellas in. But is he in charge of that? I don't think he is. And he should be the one that's driving it to say, well, I want an experienced player in that position. He should be the one that's driving it. And I don't think he is. And that's your basic point.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back to Liverpool, when Klopp took over, was it 4 years ago? Liverpool weren't going anywhere. You know? Mm. But there's no doubt that Klopp was in charge of the situation at Liverpool. Right, and I know he's been there 4 years, but he's been in charge of getting certain players out, getting certain players in. That's his judgment, right? And that's your starting point. That's your basic point in managing relationship to the club. I don't think Solskjaer has that authority to do what's needed to be done. I mean, in the summer, for example, when they did buy the three players, they are young players, they're good players. He was on his holidays. Solskjaer, I don't think he had much to do with it.
So, whether or not he has the power, and it doesn't seem he has a huge amount of power in terms of transfers, there's also clearly problems further up the line with Ed Woodward and their difficulty, it seems, with getting deals over the line. So they're trying to sign Bruno Fernandes from Sporting Lisbon at the moment. They're clearly desperately needing players, and it seems they'll go right down to the wire, or if they can get the deal done at all. Like, that's not how a club that sees itself as the biggest in the world should be operating, surely.
I agree with that. And you say, what's the lad's name?
Ed Woodward.
Not Edward, the player, the Portuguese players.
Bruno Fernandes.
Right. Now, you'd have to say, first of all, you'd have to say, is he Solskjaer's pick? Right? Never mind whether a man can get him or not, who's picking him? Right? I get the impression it's not Solskjaer that's doing them. So even if they get that over the line, Solskjaer's getting a player that that's not his player. And I think I said before in this programme a few times, every manager has a vision of what they want on the pitch. Mm. Right? And the only way to fulfil that vision is get the players in that you want. And nobody agrees on players. I mean, I was very close with Peter Lorimer and Norman Hunter on players, say, for when we played together. And Norman said, I don't fancy him. And I think he's really good. You know, there's nobody agrees all the time. But the person that has to have the say in it is the manager, because he's going to be responsible for results and everything that goes with that. Right? So you'd have to, I mean, if Solskjaer was here now, the first question I'd ask, do you want this Portuguese player? You know, he said, yeah, I'd love to get him. Now you go back to Woodward, you've got to get that for me. Then he's failing in his job. But if Horst Solskjaer said to us, no, I don't really want him, then it doesn't matter what the CEO would do. Do you know what I mean, Nathan? You have to have that thing in the club. There has to be a setup in the club where the manager says, this is what I want. Now, like in Ferguson's time, he had, I can't think of the lad's name that he had in, got the players for him.
Above him?
Yeah.
When David Gill was there?
David Gill? Gill. Mm. Now, there's no doubt they had a good relationship. And I think Ferguson trusted him completely. Mm. I want Joe Bloggs. I'll get him for you. Or I'll try and get him for you. Right? But it was Ferguson's choice. I mean, all the great years, there was never any director of football at Old Trafford. Ferguson was in charge of it, quite rightly. Mm. And he got the players in that he wanted. He got rid of the players that he didn't want. So Gill was the man. But he trusted him. I don't think that I think there's a separation between Solskjaer. I don't think Solskjaer is saying to Woodward, I want Joe Bloggs. I'll see if I'm getting fired. They're going for it. Whoever's making the decisions there, I don't think Solskjaer has been even...
Final say.
I don't think might not even be addressed.
Right.
On this is what we're going to get. Like, he's just given it, and that's it. And that's why the club is in... You talk about why is the club in the mess and there should be more of a structure to it. That's your main structure. The relationship between who's getting the players
and who's the manager
and who wants the players. Mm.
The win last night for Burnley was the first time they'd won in Old Trafford for 58 years.
Yeah.
I know you've a good memory of matches. Do you remember playing the last time Burnley won at Manchester United? 5-2?
Yeah. Hammered.
Yeah.
I think they went on to win the league that year.
In 62?
Yeah. I think they were a terrific team. Jimmy McIlroy, yeah. They did some terrific players in it. They nicked it from Spurs.
Right, I think it was the end of the season.
They might not have won the league, but they were a terrific... They were a first-class team, and I remember getting a right hiding.
Was that a good United side? So you were playing Nobby Styles, Dennis Laws on the team?
No, we weren't good. We weren't good. I think we did okay. The following year was 63. Actually, we won the cup, but we struggled against relegation. Mm. We played Manchester City in a big match. It was only about three or four matches to go, and we were near the relegation zone. But after that, after 63, then it picked up at Old Trafford.
We saw last night, like 10 minutes from time, 5 minutes from time, that, like, Old Trafford's almost deserted. The United fans had enough. And granted, we're at a stage where games are kicking off at 8:15. They're ridiculously late anyways. People need to try and get home and things like that. But it just shows what's going on. When you think of a game like that in 1962, was that a jolt for Manchester United being beaten 5-2 at Burnley? Or was it something that would have caused ructions?
Well, they wouldn't have been happy about it, but that was a time, you see, in 1962, 63, 61, 63, the club was recovering from the Munich air disaster. Mm. So there wasn't the expectations on the team at that particular time that you have now, Nathan. Now, the crowd wouldn't have been pleased about it. I don't remember them going out like 50 minutes before the end.
Yeah.
And like, this was a different Burnley team. Like the Burnley team of today, with respect to them, they're average. I mean, the Burnley team at that time would have been expected to win, actually, at Old Trafford.
Right, yeah, Burnley had won the league in 1960, finished third that season. Everton won the league that season, but were obviously thereabouts all the time.
Oh, yeah, they were really, really top-class team. So they wouldn't have... Like, I think last night, I'd say the majority of Manchester United supporters going to Old Trafford would have expected a win, Nathan. And that's where you get the disappointment. In 1962, I don't think many of the United supporters would have really expected a win in that particular match.
We've spoken about a lot of the great players you played with and played against over the years. Dennis Law?
Oh, yeah.
Great. Right up there?
Yeah. Dennis was He was a striker, Dennis. Mm. Very good in the air for his. He wasn't a terrifically big lad, but he was the most dynamic player I ever played with or against. Balls flying across, balls flying across the box. Was, I mean, nobody else could get them.
Just his movement.
Yeah, quick and aggressive. Very aggressive lad playing as well, but quick. Really quick and anticipated it, obviously, to get there in the first place. But he'd get, come back off the goalkeeper. He'd be the first in. Ball's flying across the box. He'd get it. Nobody else would get it. And he was a great player, Dennis. Dennis got, was very unlucky. He got a bad knee injury before they won the European Cup. They didn't play in that match. And Dennis wasn't quite the same after that because he needed this. He had to have the right physical attributes to do what he did. And once he got a knee injury, it slowed him down a little bit. He still was a good player. He went to Manchester City then after that. But he wasn't quite the same Dennis Law as before. And he was dynamic. He was a terrific player.
Yeah, because the clips you'd see of him, you could even imagine him as a winger at times and seemed to have that trickery. But his goal scoring record suggests he was just a brilliant poacher.
He didn't contribute that much in the general play.
Right.
And he wouldn't be away. He wasn't a lad that beat players, actually. He was dynamic. Ball over the top of the defender, he'd be onto it like a shot. Ball flying across the box, and aggressive with it as well. Because Jimmy Greaves was a great goal scorer, did it in his own way. But Jimmy wasn't aggressive at all. Jimmy wouldn't tackle a hot dinner, Whereas Dennis would be, he was aggressive, really aggressive, and he'd be in, he'd be on top of it, and he'd be making himself. Noticed, let's put it this way, in and around the penalty box. And good in the air for his height, Nathan. He would have been one, I think.
An Aguero type? An Aguero? A Sergio Aguero
no.
type?
No. This guy was dynamic. Dynamic. I mean, Aguero is what he is. He gets in the right positions and he knocks it in. But he wouldn't be he wouldn't be the one that would be putting a defender under pressure. And I mean, Aguero's a great player, as we know. But Dennis was unique in what he did. He was quick, dynamic, read the game well, pure striker. Although I think afterwards, I think he said he preferred to play in midfield.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he have that talent?
I don't think so. I think where he played was where he was
you
best.
You stay where you are and I'll stay where I am and we'll all be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
We need to take a very quick break. We'll talk about Liverpool then.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Welcome back, John Giles is in the studio. I'm tempted to just keep on with the conversation about Bobby Charlton and George Best, which is fascinating. We might save that for the football show a little bit later on when you're back in.
Yeah,
we've a bit more time because we're tight enough at the moment. Let's briefly chat Liverpool. So they're playing Wolves in just under 10 minutes, on chain from the weekend against Manchester United. There was a gulf in class, clearly. The 10 minutes to stand out is just after half-time where Liverpool... I look back that night. Manchester United, not a single United player touched the ball in the Liverpool half for the first 10 minutes of that second half. Is that Liverpool as good as you've seen them at times in that game?
Yeah, well, all games are different, Nathan. Sometimes you go two up after 10 minutes and the game is virtually over, especially with a team like Liverpool. What we saw last week was a team that were winning 1-0. That could have been 3-0. It could have been a walkover, really, in many ways. And that didn't happen. And that when you're playing in that situation and you're only the one up, there's a little bit of nervousness about getting the second one, or Manchester United breaking away and getting a goal. But they dominated it. I mean, it should have been all over, I'd say, in the first 20 minutes. They were far too good. I mean, they were way, way ahead of Manchester United, despite the score. I think looking back on it during the game, I think if they'd won 4-6-0, it would have just been about right.
Because the way Solskjaer was talking after the game was, showing progression, showing character, we stuck with them.
Yeah. That's manager talk, Nathan. When I was a young fella, my father used to say about managers, all the geese are swans. And my experience of managers, when I was playing manager at West Brom and that, I never came across a manager that said, well done, you were the better team.
Right.
It was, I remember
being... And you got to be like that.
Well, it doesn't matter, really. But they all could see their own team. We played Manchester United when Tommy Docherty was the manager, for example. And we had a good win at the Hawthorns. I think we won 4-0, 4-1. And you see Tommy afterwards. And Tommy, they'd all talk about their own team. Tommy'd say, do them good. You know, they needed a kick up the backside. Not, well done, your team. You know what I mean? And I found it extraordinary because I was new in into management, you know. But it was very seldom they didn't talk about their team.
Right. The way Liverpool played in that game, and it's been a factor all season, like they press right up. So the centre-halves play on the halfway line. They don't let teams out. I know there were probably concerns about that in that, like, you're a long ball forward at the right time. Players can get in behind. If the offside trap doesn't work perfectly, there's issues. Like, have they pretty much perfected it? Are you surprised by how successful they've been with that?
No, I don't think they've been successful all the time with it, Nathan. I think because they're such a good team, they're going to be attacking more than anywhere else. But there have been a few occasions in matches where they got away with it. It's not necessary. It's the old offside trap. You talk about pushing them up and that. It's the offside trap. They've got players like Gomez, Robertson. These are all quick players. And I've seen it in a few occasions where they got away with it. They mightn't have done last, mightn't have been Manchester United. But if you, I don't think it's necessary. I think if they drop off the pace behind them, like there will be a stage where somebody will come. There has been, I've seen it this, where somebody's come from deep and they get in. There's no, in other words, it's not a ploy. It's a weakness. Actually, not just for Liverpool, any team doing that. You're taking a chance all the time where if you defend properly, which is to drop off with the pace that they have, teams would have no chance of scoring a goal, in my opinion.
They're obviously not conceding goals at the moment, though,
Nathan, they won't. But you'll find, I guarantee by the end of the season, you'll see one or two or three occasions where they will lose goals from that. Right?
Is it worth taking the risk then if it's only...
It's always worth
a small number of goals.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how important that goal can be. A goal can win a match. It could be 3 points for you. If there's, what I'm saying, there's no need to do it with the players that they have. I've never agreed with playing this offside trap, unless somebody's taken advantage, where you know they're not getting back when they should be getting back, and you push out and you leave them behind. But in general play, I mean, you go back to start the season. I think it was the old Charity Shield. I think they played Manchester City. That there was at least three or four occasions in that match where City got through, right? But when you're playing against teams that are inferior to Liverpool, right, they don't get a chance to do that, you know, because Liverpool have the ball most of the time. But in my experience in football, that somewhere along the line, you will pay the price for that. But they're such a good team that other teams don't get a chance to do it.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary, Nathan. All you have to do is hold your ground. And the ball's going to come over the top and you've got an advantage on the race back to the goals. Whereas the other way, it can be something can happen and some of them have been very, very close at times. I'm just giving you my opinion on it anyway.
Yeah, we are out of time and that game gets underway at 8 o'clock. You're going to watch it first and come back in. I know you don't like previews. Do you think Wolves have a chance in this game?
I think Wolves are a good side. I think you've always got a chance. I wouldn't back them, obviously. I'd back Liverpool. I think Liverpool will win. But, you know, we saw them at Anfield a few weeks ago and there was a couple of decisions went again. Quite right. They were right decisions, actually. But they're a good team. But they've had a heavy schedule, Wolves. You know, they've had a really heavy schedule. Europa League. They play more matches than anybody else. So I think it like playing now with so many matches it could come against them. If I was backing anybody, it would have to be Liverpool. But Wolves are capable at any time of getting a result. They have good players.
All right, that game gets underway in just a couple of minutes' time. John will be back with us on the football show. We'll also talk to Philip Quinn about Niall Quinn's appointment as interim deputy CEO at the FAI. And we'll talk to Seanie Maguire as well. But up next, we're talking rugby with Tom English and Keith Wood.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
It is Thursday night's football show. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock. John Giles with us in studio as well, as a rare treat because we have some live football. Wolves against Liverpool, second half just underway. Liverpool leading by a goal to nil. Jordan Henderson with a header on 8 minutes, but it's been a good game since then. Wolves, as you would expect, acquitting themselves very, very well. They've had a couple of chances, particularly one in the first half for Matt Doherty that he headed wide, and Liverpool as well, losing Sadio Mane to a first half injury. Coming up, we're going to talk to Preston Seanie Maguire, and we will also hear from Philip Quinn on Niall Quinn's appointment as the interim deputy CEO of the FAI. 53106 is the text number, as Wolves have a big chance inside the Liverpool area, but Joe Gomez gets back to block the volley, so it remains 1-0. John, yet again Liverpool in front. Yeah, deservedly so.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would say so. They scored early on from a corner kick, Nathan, which wasn't good marking from Wolves. Wolves were a good side, as we know. They came back into it with, as you say, Doherty had a good chance. So they haven't dominated it totally, Liverpool. There's still a possibility that that Wolves can come back into this game. Although, if I were putting money on it, I would definitely put my money on Liverpool to win it. Mm. And I think fancy Liverpool to get another goal, Nathan.
They very nearly got one just a couple of minutes ago. Mo Salah forced a good save from the Wolves goalkeeper. He's been buzzing along nicely, Mo Salah, tonight. He's 11 goals so far this season. So last year he got 22. The year before it was ridiculous. He got 34. Where are you on his form over the last few weeks?
Well, I don't think it's been as good as it was last year or the year before so far, Nathan. There's a bit of the season to go yet, as we know. But he hasn't had as many chances. He's not missing chances. And I think he's moved into the middle an awful lot. Like before, I think when he was scoring the goals 2 years ago, he was playing from the right wing and from that position and coming in, which is deadly, on his left foot, which opens up the play for him to be able to curl it around wherever he wants. I think he's just playing too much down the middle of the pitch. But there again, he has the other scoring as well.
Yeah, is that him potentially, because teams are so wary of how good he is, that they're trying to almost double up on him out in the wing and he's trying to find a bit of space somewhere else on the pitch?
Well, when you're playing in as good a team as Liverpool is, Nathan, like although you know he's there, it's very hard when the other lads are doing their stuff to mark him, you know, because ultimately they get the ball out. I mean, if he was playing in a bad team and he was doing what he's doing for Liverpool, but he wouldn't be getting the ball. In the Liverpool team, he's always going to get the ball because he's got so many good players. But that's what I think. I think he's far down, too far in the middle of the pitch.
Wolves, it's been some success story since they were promoted. They start this game in seventh. They are 6 points off fourth place, but they've had this long Europa League campaign since all the way back in July. Every time you watch them, you can't but be impressed. And particularly, you touched on it earlier, and I'm not surprised that you're a fan of Jean Moutinho in the middle of midfield. Like, you look at their midfield of Jean Moutinho and Ruben Neves.
Yeah.
And you look at Manchester United's midfield without bringing everything back to Manchester United. But, they would transform a Manchester United team.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're two good players. They've got a lot of good players. I think they did a good job when they were in the Championship. They invested well. They spent money, but teams can spend money and not spend it very well. Mm. But they actually spent it very well. So when they did get into the Premiership, they weren't struggling like a lot of teams going back down again. I think they finished seventh in their first year, and they're a well, well-established team. They're a good game against anybody. So they've done a really, really good job at Wolves. Mm. There's no doubt about that.
Moutinho and Neves, probably different stages of their careers. Neves, I think, still only 22. Moutinho, 10 years older. And one of these players has probably been linked with a move to the Premier League for a decade. Oh, Wolves have equalised. What a goal that was. It is Raul Jimenez with the goal. The cross from Adama Traore. It was one end of the pitch to the other. Liverpool have conceded for the first time in 7.5 Premier League games, and that was sensational football, just as we've been talking about Wolves and the threat that they posed. They broke quickly down the right-hand side, and Adama Traore floated a perfect ball in to Raul Jimenez, who heads past Alisson, and Wolves are level. It is Wolves 1, Liverpool 1, and a almost Liverpool-esque goal thrown out by Rui Patricio, chested down by the Wolves player, back, and then a couple of lovely run forward, skips past two Liverpool challenges, releases Adama Traore down the right-hand side. First time ball, just lifted it up. In fact, it was Raul Jimenez who set that goal up and finished it off. That is ridiculously good forward play from Raul Jimenez. He was the one who chested the ball down initially from Rui Patricio's throw, brought it out to the left-hand side, skips past a couple of challenges, lays it off to Adama Traore and gets on the end of the goal. That is a special, special goal, John.
It is. Now, obviously, your listeners can't see it. But remember, I spoke to you before about the high line. Obviously, you can't see it. But when you see in the build-up to that game, when the ball's played down the right side, the players move out, including Van Dijk, right? So when he makes the breakdown, they make the breakdown the right. The Wolves players are running back, Nathan.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're running back. Whereas if they hadn't had the high line, they'd be in a position where they could see the ball coming across. We're talking on the radio here, but it's something that they shouldn't do. But to go back to Wolves, brilliant goal. Mm. You know, you say it was never such court, was it?
No, Raul Jimenez. Who initially chested it down as well from the throw.
Yeah, and then went on the run. Really top class goal, no doubt, from Wolves' point of view. Like, you wouldn't have... Wolves are a good team. I think we said that before. They're a very, very good team. But like, they're going to make it difficult for Liverpool, because Liverpool were well in control of the game in the first half. But I think Liverpool will come back into it, now to myself. But these guys won't give anything away. They're very, very good, Wolves. They've been good all season. They've been good up since they've come up out of the Championship. No doubt about that.
So, Wolves won, Liverpool won. Remember, Liverpool have only dropped points in one Premier League game so far this season. 22 wins, one draw heading into this match. But with 53 minutes gone, it is Wolves 1, Liverpool 1. Let's get the report on that goal from Molyneux, from Alex Winter.
It's Wolves 1, Liverpool 1. Game on at Molyneux. Raul Jimenez with the goal, finishing a lovely breakaway move. It was Jimenez who started the move, stepping around Robertson like he wasn't there in the left-back position, feeding Adama Traore on the right-hand side of the area. Traore sent up a delightful cross towards the penalty spot, and there was Jimenez arriving first to glance home the header into the right-hand corner of the goal. A tremendous goal, and Wolves suddenly back in the game. Molyneux rampant, bouncing fans all around us. Wolves 1, Liverpool 1.
So, Niall Quinn, the new interim deputy CEO of the FAI. His role will focus on leading a future League of Ireland strategy, the overall development of the game in Ireland, including supporting grassroots and community initiatives, together with player pathway programmes. Philip Quinn, the football correspondent for the Irish Daily Mail, is on the line. Evening, Philip.
Hello, Nathan, and I'm no relation of Niall, but I same surname, known him a long time. Yeah, this has come a bit of a bolt from the blue in some ways, but you fire away with your first question.
Yeah,
and
well, on that side of it, there had been whispers, I think, over probably the last 24, 48 hours, maybe since Gary Owens went in and was appointed as CEO, but still some surprise because, well, Niall Quinn has spoken a lot about the future of Irish football over the last 8 or 9 months, and certainly in recent times he seemed to be suggesting that while he certainly wanted to help Irish football, that he wasn't going to do so in any official role. How did this appointment come out, from what you know?
Yeah, from what I know, yeah. Well, I've spoken to Niall a couple of times in the last few weeks, and I had dinner with him at the Soccer Writers Association of Ireland Awards not that long ago, last Friday week. And there was a feeling that, yes, he wanted to help, and maybe it was going to be a more forward, more sort of upfront role than we had perhaps thought initially. I think there's a bit of history here, and I think you have to go back to last May when Niall launched the Football Vision Regroup, which was targeting a major reform for League of Ireland with academies, and also he was looking for government funding for League of Ireland clubs. And in that Football Visionary group, there were 9 names, and 2 of those names were Roy Barrett and Gary Owens. And I think if you look at the trail since then, the Visionary group, they sort of shelved up their plans in September. They didn't make much progress with the FAI. They felt they weren't being listened to. But when Barrett came on board as the as the independent chair earlier in January, and I remember thinking, hang on a second, I know that name. And then I was thinking about Niall and him, and I spoke to Niall about Roy Barrett, and they became pally when Niall put together the Jack Charlton reunion of Irish players at the K Club in September 2018. That alliance, and Niall spoke about Roy Barrett's integrity and ability to get people to work together in a room, people from different backgrounds, and he said he's a really, really top guy. And then I saw Gary Owens' appointment earlier this week, and he's another member of that visionary group, and another K Club connection. Gary Owens was captain of the K Club in 2018. Niall Quinn is captain of the K Club in 2020. So I think there were 2 key props of Niall's visionary group holding the most important positions in the FAI: independent chair and interim CEO. And now the third element of that is Niall to come on board, and he can do so knowing that the people who are in charge and will back him to the hilt are very close allies, professionally and personally. He didn't perhaps have the sort of, he wanted to go forward, he couldn't be sure who would be there for him to work with, but he knows these 2 guys, he can trust them, they can trust him, and we now have an extraordinary troika from the visionary group who are basically in charge of Irish football.
Yeah, in one way it does seem quite remarkable when you talk about last May and that visionary group getting together, and Niall Quinn being very much to the forefront of that, and you mentioned they didn't make much progress with the FAI. It seemed at the time they didn't make a huge amount of progress with any of the stakeholders. How do we end up in a situation then with 3 of them essentially taking over the FAI on an interim basis.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to sort of look at their backgrounds, the CVs. I think what their proposals for the League of Ireland. I think what happened as well, Nate, when you go back, you know, when the FAI sort of fell into crisis last year, a lot of people jumped forward and said, "Right, okay, now this is what we can do here. This is how we're going to solve things." And I don't think everybody was ready. I don't think Irish football was ready for all these assistants coming forward from that. Niall was one group, Kieran Lucid and the All-Ireland proposal, they came forward. And I think what needed more at that time was, hang on a second, we need to sort of just move on the people who are there, move them all out, and bit by bit start putting the blocks in place for a new future. The Visionary Group couldn't have worked last May, nor could the All-Ireland project have taken off last May or last summer. Maybe next year, maybe going forward, either of those proposals can be looked at. I think what needed to happen was for people to move out of the FAI in senior positions and for people to be put in. And when you look at the people who have been put in and where they come from, well, now you can see why, for example, Niall's Visionary Group and his proposals will certainly get an airing again. I think he was very strong in government support for League of Ireland clubs and for academies. But I think what happened in the madness of all last summer with the governance review group going on and all its recommendations, it was just too quick, too soon for people to come forward with, hang on, lads, this is what needs to be done for the All-Ireland League, this is what needs to be done for the League of Ireland. It was a question of hold your horses, lads. We need to start at the FAI first. And that's what's happened in the last 9-10 months. And I think what Niall has done today, I think, if you look at the feedback in the last couple of hours that the profile his appointment has got, I think it's positive. I think people would see him as a guy who's a person of integrity and trustworthy and a good person who served Irish football as a player and has shown that he can get people to work together. He got Roy Keane to do an extraordinary job at Sunderland, which was a gamble. He also got Irish people to buy Sunderland and make them a success for that period that he was there.
And he stepped up, Philip, is the other thing.
Work, you know?
Like, he has stepped up here, whereas I know there are people who maybe, certainly in League of Ireland circles, who listened to what the Visionary Group had to say, and like at the time it was probably all quite rushed together and maybe weren't overly impressed. But like, we've spent a lifetime wanting football people involved. Niall Quinn is one of our most legendary players. He's been chairman of Sunderland. He's been there. He's done that. And he hasn't just talked the talk. He's now actually willing to go in and walk the walk.
He is. He's actually, you're dead right there, Nathan. He has now put his head above the parapet and he said, yeah, count me in. I'm there. And he will have to take the hits if things don't work out. And he will have to leave a legacy. How long he's going to be there, no one's quite sure. He spoke today. He said today, earlier, it's only going to be for a short time. We don't know how long the time is going to be because we haven't had a chance to ask him that question. But you're right, he's now in the firing line. And he is unique in that I was just thinking back of the various FBI general secretaries, and we've only ever had sort of one chief executive. But there's been nobody with the football background and profile that Niall has had. So that gives him a head start, I think, because he can walk into a room and people will gravitate towards him. You know, he can pick up the phone to almost anybody because he was a player. He did it for 16 years for Ireland. That's a big help. And he's also a good people person. You know, he has a sort of a way of people opening up in front of him. But he has to deliver. He can't just go in and sit there and say, you know, I'm Niall Quinn, the former Irish international, like, you know, and, you know, all hunky dory. He has to work. He has to work with Owens. He has to work under the jurisdiction of Barrett, who is the independent chair. And he has to make this new appointment work. I'd be intrigued as to what his actual specific role is. He spoke about, you know, in general terms today. But yeah. I want to sit down and look at him face to face, say, how long are you here for? What's your ultimate goal for Irish football? Are you going to be gone in 6 months, 18 months, 24 months? We need to know. Irish football needs to know. We also need to know, is Gary Owens going to be there? Is he a contender for the full-time CEO job? There has been progress, but it's not enough. We need more.
Yeah, because when you look at, and I read them out at the start, what he's going to be focusing on around League of Ireland overall development, like they do sound like long-term plans. But even Niall Quinn, when he was speaking to Virgin Media this evening, was talking about this being a short-term appointment and how you can make real progress when everybody knows this is a six-month thing. And also, you are going to be advertising for a full-time CEO and presumably a full-time deputy CEO, who are people who may come in and have a very different vision. That can you get enough across the line, or is it just a case of going in and steadying the ship over the next little while?
Yeah, that's the $64,000 question. Why couldn't, if Owens and Quinn get on well, and they know each other, if they provide, you know, if they seem to have a good working relationship and their alliance is strong and we can see benefits, why can't they stay as full-time CEO and deputy CEO? Why not? Maybe they just want to. Maybe the titles are deliberately couched in such a way that they can walk away if things don't work out. I think in balance,
obviously, they're very much entitled to go and apply for these jobs when they are advertised, and now they'll be in this position and they'll get a sense over the next six months, and everybody in the FAI and the board and the independent directors will get a sense over the next 6 months. But everything we've heard over the last year has been about a clear and transparent process. Is that a clear and transparent process to appoint a new CEO if it is the interim CEO who's now in pole position to get it?
Yeah. The word interim I don't think it's a very comfortable word, to be honest with you. It just means temporary. We need to hear from these guys. Are they interested in staying there for the long haul? And you talk about transparency. And I'll just say on a sidebar, there's an EGM coming up on Saturday. We're going to find out about the new president of the FAI. And the media are barred from that at the moment. Now, if you're talking about reforms and transparency, the media should be allowed in to see how this vote unfolds. And maybe
so, as it stands, the media are allowed to talk to the president afterwards, but won't be there for the actual EGM?
Yeah, we're not allowed. We're barred from the EGMs. Right. We're allowed to go to AGMs, and we're allowed to go to reconvened AGMs. And we were welcomed at City West just over Christmas there for the reconvened AGM when the accounts were put forward. And it was fine. Everyone worked very well. But for the EGMs, the FBI have not... They have not. We have asked, can we attend? And so far, we haven't been told we can. At the moment, we're barred, which I just think is crazy. It's a draconian sort of rule. But one other thing we need to know, and this is key. I think Nathan, this appointment of Quinn to follow Owens, and what Quinn said earlier on TV a little while ago, I think we're going to find, after the president is elected on Saturday, I think next week there will be a press conference, and I think Shane Ross and UEFA and the FAI's new top table are going to be sitting around and revealing and talking about bailout. It's happening. And that is crucial. And maybe Ross would see people like Owens and Barrett and Quinn as someone he can trust. The FAI need 18 million for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think they're looking for maybe 6 million a year, break it down by 3 years. And he will feel if that cheque is going to be half written by the government or UEFA, and a little bit of it with the banks agreeing to it, if he would like to hand that over to people he can trust. And I think in Barrett, Owens, and in particularly Niall Quinn, I think that's somebody that the Irish government can trust.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Like, Barrett and Owens are very well respected, obviously have the business credentials, but it was notable that within minutes of the statement announcing Quinn's appointment, we had a statement from Minister Brendan Griffin approving the appointment, whereas we're well used to statements disapproving of appointments. But Niall Quinn, and the power of his personality, and because of his legendary status and his 92 caps, people do sit up and listen, that he's a good person to have in that room when the discussions between the FAI, UEFA and the banks are happening.
And I don't think Niall would have gone forward unless he knew those talks have been progressive, and that a cheque was about to be written, and that there was a future for Irish football. And that's the future he wants to be part of, and he wants to help get up and running. And if 2020 is much better than 2019, which was horrible, and if, for example, we got results on the pitch, and if McCarthy could wheel the Oracle in the end of March and we suddenly qualify for the finals, maybe this summer we'd all be looking at Irish football, and maybe we'd all be falling in love with Irish football as we did in 1990 and 1994 all over again.
Finally, Kieran Lucid is due to hold a series of meetings over the next few weeks with various stakeholders, interested parties about the All-Ireland League and try and step it up another gear. Niall Quinn is now very much involved in the League of Ireland. The League of Ireland needs short-term, medium-term, long-term work on it. Do you expect that he'll be able to have an influence on the League of Ireland in the short term if this ends up in a six-month gig?
It's another conundrum, isn't it? Because the League of Ireland, it does need major remedial work, and it's not going to happen overnight. I think this season the league is in place in terms of the schedule. At least the Premier Division is. The First Division is another kettle of fish. So I don't think you're going to see reforms in the League of Ireland this year. But I think people need to sit back as this year unfolds and let's see, is there a way forward for an All Ireland League now? I can tell you, and you're probably aware of this yourself, Nathan, that the appetite in the IFA is not as strong as it is down here for an embracing of an All-Ireland League. Lucid's proposals, they really look as if they're worth having a go at, but I think we need to take baby steps. I would be in favour of a cross-border competition. I know people said we've tried that before, it didn't work. Well, if that didn't work, then an All-Ireland League isn't going to work. But I think you'll see the clubs will be concentrated by the, certainly the size of the checks that they're fighting for, and that'll make people think. But I'm not sure we're ready for it yet. I think it's something that could be embraced, but it won't happen this year because, as we say, the structures are in place. But I wouldn't, Niall Quinn won't close the door to Kieran Lucid. And those meetings that he's having now next week with interested parties will be fascinating. But League of Ireland does need help and needs help urgently. And Quinn has promised it. Let's see, can he deliver?
All right, let's see. Philip Quinn, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Thank you.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Still, Wolves 1, Liverpool 1 at Molineux. Quite a game, though. Let's hear about it from Alex Winter.
It's Wolves 1, Liverpool 1, and Liverpool's 13-match winning run under threat here after Raul Jimenez has scored the equaliser 6 minutes into the second half. But Liverpool with a chance to go ahead through Roberto Firmino. The initial shot from Salah was blocked back to Firmino. The goalkeeper was on the ground and Firmino had the hold of the goal to aim at, but he shot straight at Raul Patricio, so we're still level. Wolves 1, Liverpool 1.
Yeah, so Liverpool's long, long unbeaten record, well, that as it stands, very much intact. But their winning run, as Alex said, 13 in a row under threat, and Wolves putting them under huge pressure. John Giles is in studio alongside me as Wolves attack yet again. There's just great fight. Like, they've got the technique, they've got their creativity, but there's a great fight to this Wolves side as well.
They're playing well, playing really well now. They deserve the goal in the second half. I see Fabinho has come on now, and because they need somebody to get a grip of the game for them, Liverpool, because they've had a bit of a run around in the second half, and Fabinho hopefully is the type of player that can get on the ball and get Liverpool back into it and take the heat out of it from their point of view.
You mentioned before the game about Liverpool playing an offside trap and trying to step up a lot, and in the last few minutes Wolves have had a couple of opportunities through that very point where Adama Traore, probably the quickest player in the league, to blend outside, three defenders step up, Andy Robertson's just a fraction behind them, and Wolves are in, and twice Alisson has had to make good saves.
Yeah, they've been doing that since the start of the season, but the thing is with Liverpool, they have so much of the ball that they don't have to defend very often. But what they're doing, there's definitely since the start, they have a policy that if a team is attacking them, they're going to play the high line, they call it now. It used to be the offside trap. And they don't need to do it. They just got to go with the runners, and they're not doing it. And the lead up to the goal was the same. You know, a lot of people stepped out, and there was a run down the right wing. So when they were getting back, they were facing their own goal. You know what I mean? It's hard to describe it. But that's what's... And they've been doing it all season. But luckily enough, they're on top most of the time. They have most of the possession of the ball. So they're not being caught out doing it. But if they continue, somewhere along the line, they will be caught out doing it.
Yeah, this is probably the toughest test Liverpool have faced all season. Yeah,
good side, Wolves.
Wolves have really got
it. They're playing well. They're getting at them. They've dominated the second half, Wolves. There's no doubt about that.
16 minutes remaining. Wolves 1, Liverpool 1. A text in on 53106. So, Nathan, if the Wolves midfield is so much better than Manchester United's midfield, and probably their team is better, does that make Ole a good manager, considering Manchester United are ahead of Wolves in the league? Well, actually, if Wolves get a point in this, they'll be ahead of Manchester United. So, technically, I could still be right, depending on what happens here. I don't know. We'll get back into that in a couple of moments. But I do want to get to our next guest, who I think is on the line. Seany Maguire, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
We're probably taking you away from watching the match, are we?
Yeah, I'm watching it here at the moment.
Matt Doherty, I'd imagine, is someone you're quite close to. Like, that Wolves right-hand side must be one of the most fearsome in football right now with Doherty and Traore.
Yeah, it's absolutely frightening how quick Traore is. Literally any time he gets the ball, it just looks like he's going to take on the whole team. But as you mentioned there, yeah, the Wolves are, you know, dominating the game. But I'm a Liverpool fan, so hopefully Liverpool can get back into it and win the game.
Yeah, you're not too worried just yet, I'd imagine, with that fairly solid lead at the top of the Premier League. Do you get along to Anfield? Like, when you're obviously in Preston, which isn't a million miles away from Liverpool, do you get down every so often to Anfield?
I've been to a couple of Champions League games. Obviously, it's hard to go on the weekends, you know, because most of the time we're in on Sundays, and Liverpool probably play most of their games on a Sunday or even half five on a Saturday. So it's hard on the weekends, but the odd games during the week I'll try to go out there with a few of the boys, but that's about it really.
Yeah, so obviously when you're playing Championship football, there's very little time for rest, a 46 game season, throw in the cup competitions, but right now things are going pretty well. 3-0 win over Barnsley for Preston, up to sixth inside the playoff places. It looks like it's a group with a lot of confidence at the moment.
Yeah, it's been a kind of strange season so far. I feel up until November.
No, we just seem to have lost you there for a split second. Shawnee, I'm not sure, just an issue with the line. We might give you a call back in just a moment. So still Wolves 1, Liverpool 1. Wolves are thinking about making a change in the next couple of moments. There's 14 minutes remaining in the match. So they brought on Fabinho, John. You mentioned that Liverpool needed to get a grip with things, and we were talking about just how good Moutinho and Neves were a little bit earlier. You were growing a bit frustrated with what Jordan Henderson was doing?
Well, it wasn't what he was doing, what he wasn't doing.
Right.
Because when you're playing in the middle of the field like that, and you can, you've got to read, this game is going against us. Right. And if you're playing in the middle of the midfield, one of your big jobs is to say, right, I've got to get a grip of the ball. It's only one ball on the pitch. So if you get a grip of it, a couple of passes here, just to take the heat off a little bit. Well, I don't think Henderson's capable of doing that. Fabinho is. So he's on the field now. And what I'm sure the manager wants to see is him getting a grip of the ball and getting a grip of the game. And you don't, when you're in that position, now, you don't have to be hitting great passes. Just bread and butter passes, just to get it going, get back in control of the game again. And I think Fabinho is capable of doing it. So we'll have to wait and see, is he going to do it tonight?
All right, still 1-1 with 13 minutes to go. Let's get back, Shawnee Maguire. I think the line is back. Sorry about that, Shawnee. You were just saying the season so far, how it's been a strange enough sort of season for Preston, but it seems as though it's coming right at just the right time.
Yeah, I was mentioning that, you know, up until November, I think we're sitting, you know, in the top two, comfortable. Mm. And then we had, a tough Christmas period, I think. Our last home game against Charlton there last Saturday was our first win in about 6 or 7, up, I think it was since 14th of December. But yeah, you know, a couple of wins, a couple of positive results can send you back up right at the table. I think we're 10th, 11th this time last week. But, you know, a couple of wins now and we're sitting 6th. And, you know, I think from about 3rd to 11th or 12th in the table, I think there's about four or five points in it. So, as I mentioned there, like, a couple of wins could send you right into the mixer. I think February will tell a lot. I think there's 6 or 7 games to be played. You know, everyone to play. A lot of teams playing each other. So, hopefully we can just, get a couple of wins under our belt. Hopefully more than a couple in that period, and we can, stay in the mixer and in the top six.
Yeah, because I guess when the games are coming thick and fast, and at least you have a bit of a break, probably the last break you'll have for quite a while at the moment, but when they are coming thick and fast, momentum is everything, because it feels that's been the difficulty for Preston at times. You get a couple of wins, you say you put yourself into this sort of position, and over the last season or so, you've just struggled to capitalise on that.
Yeah, we're always, the chase, or rather being the team being chased in the last couple of years, well, obviously since I've been here anyway. I'd say nearly every team in the Championship goes through a rough spell. You look at Leeds and West Brom at the moment, they're struggling a bit. Leeds, I think they've only won one in the last 7 games, and the same with West Brom. So, as you mentioned there, you get a bit of momentum, win a couple of games, and you find yourself right up the table. I think everyone can see Championship, especially this year, anyone can beat anyone. I know it's, cliche saying, in the Championship, but I think this season's been a lot to do with that. And you've seen it the other night with Stoke beating West Brom at West Brom, and you can't go into any game thinking it's going to be an easy one, or the opposite, where you think it's going to be a tough one, because anyone can beat anyone. And We've obviously a weekend off this weekend. We're out of the FA Cup, so that'll give us time to, take a breather, and look forward, to the following week.
Yeah, it was a free kick for Wolves there. John was just telling us out on the left-hand side. It was an in-swinger. It was too close to Alisson, so Liverpool get away with it. But 10 minutes left, Wolves 1, Liverpool 1. From your own point of view this season, Shawnee, you've started 25 games, 4 goals, 5 assists. Most of those starts out on the left-hand side. Like Alec Neil, I think at the start of the season, said he very much saw you as maybe a man down the middle, but he's played you on the left, not as a left winger, more as an inside forward. That sort of old-school inside forward is how he's described it. Have you got used to that role now? Do you very much know that role inside out, or are you still itching to get back down the middle?
Yeah, obviously, I you know, my preferred position would be is, you know, down the middle as a number nine. But I think the way the gaffer has team playing, me playing, I really enjoy playing it out on the left. I think I've started two games as a number nine, and one of them was the first game of the season. So I found myself, you know, majority of the games I've played this season out on the left, and I've liked to score a few more goals. You know, I went through a patch there, you know, where things weren't going right, and you get frustrated. But obviously, I've nipped in with a few assists. But
are you hard on yourself when you're going through those sort of spells where you're not getting the goals?
Yeah, I'm my worst critic at times. I think when you go through spells like this, or Firmino nearly scored there. Sorry about that.
Firmino very nearly scored. Yeah. It was a good save by Rui Patricio. Got him behind the Wolves defence. We're both doing interviews and live match commentary from two different parts of the world at the same time.
As I mentioned there, like I can be my worst critic at times, so I just got to, you know, contribute as much as I can. You know, we've, as a team, I think we have a lot of goals coming, you know, from literally all areas of the pitch. We have a lot of players with, you know, a good few goals, and you know, that's probably why we're, you know, sitting sixth on the table, where we don't really have, you know, there's a lot of teams with players that, you know, score 18, 19 goals already at this stage in the season, but it shows, you know, the team morale and, you know, the characters we have in our dressing room to see a lot of players, you know, nip in, you know, really important goals.
The injury problems and the consistent hamstring problems that you seem to be having for probably a 18 months, 2 year spell, particularly when you went over first, like they seem like they're a thing of the past now. Is it something that's on the back of your mind? Because it certainly felt, say, a year ago, like there was a worry you just weren't getting that run of games that you needed to get into a flow. There just seemed to be a constant setback. Like you must be in a slightly different state of mind now. Can you trust your body a bit more?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's come with time. Been injury free now for the best part of nearly 14 months, which, you know, it's a massive confidence booster. You know, this is my first proper, you know, full season as, you know, a championship player. You know, the first two seasons I was kind of in and out with, you know, as you mentioned there, with, you know, serious hamstring problems. So to get a good run of games and have that confidence is big for me. And I felt that, you know, I'm over that. I've learned to use my body, as Firmino scored.
Goal, goal, goal. Goal for Liverpool. Roberto Firmino gets the goal this time. It was brilliant play. Mo Salah just on the edge of the area, kept the ball alive, and knocked back in the ball, was slid through to Roberto Firmino, left-footed, a rocket into the top corner. And Liverpool have been under all sorts of pressure in this second half. Wolves have been far and away the better team, but Liverpool kept probing, and they have got their goal, yet another late goal. And with 6 minutes left, it is Wolves 1, Liverpool 2. Hey, Shaunie, I know you want to get back to watching the match, so we'll have a longer chat over the coming weeks when we get an opportunity. But just just on the Ireland situation, you got that goal against New Zealand. I think I've rarely been in a game where everybody was just so genuinely happy for a player to get that goal and to see you break your international duck and everyone could understand what it meant to you. Do you talk to Mick McCarthy? Is he a manager who keeps in touch? Like, there's obviously a lot of options in one way up front, but a lot of them are very inexperienced, and you have that game time now at international level. Do you know where you are, sort of in the pecking order?
I'm not sure, but yeah, no. Mick, one thing Mick does is he does the regular contact with his players. Well, especially with obviously me, Noam Brownie, you know, pretty much with him, you know, every day. And he does. He messages us, you know, on the regular, you know, keeping in touch. And it was great to, you know, finally get that goal for Ireland. You know, it's been a long time coming since obviously my debut and that. So I felt, you know, the last trip, you know, I did myself no harm. You know, obviously with that game against New Zealand, and then, you know, playing a part, you know, the game against Denmark. So hopefully I can, you know, bring that momentum, keep playing them in the regular with my club, you know, hopefully score a few more goals and, you know, push Preston up the league. And then hopefully when, you know, that chance comes in March, you know, help Ireland get to the European Championships.
All right, Shawnee, great stuff. Thanks a lot for taking the call. Best of luck with the rest of the season. Enjoy the rest of the match.
Well, you too. All right,
Shawnee Maguire there. Very good to take a call on this Thursday night. Let's go to Alex Winter at Molineux and hear about that goal.
It's Wolves 1, Liverpool 2. Roberto Firmino giving the Reds the lead with minutes to play here in the West Midlands. A long throw-in from the right-hand side. Wolves didn't deal with it. Fell at the feet of Mohamed Salah. A neat touch back to Jordan Henderson, who played in Firmino. One touch and he fired into the top corner of the net with his left boot. Are Liverpool going 14 games on a winless run now? Minutes away they are. Wolves 1, Liverpool 2.
John Giles, still in studio. John, this feels reminiscent of Manchester United during their greatest days of, even when they're not at their very, very best, they always score, they always find a way.
Yeah, well, they have terrific players, as we know. You know, Firmino scored there. Firmino scored a good goal. Salah was, so they have those forwards that are capable of doing it. There's not just one of them. There's three or four of them that can pull it back. You know, funny enough, Wolves didn't defend it very well in the lead up to it. There were plenty of players back, but that's their business. It's not Liverpool's business. But Liverpool have that. They're never going to stop playing. Mm. They're never going to give in. They have that, and all the top teams keep going. That's why Manchester United did it when they were at their best. You know, a lot of good players, and they Wolves were playing really well, but they didn't score it when they were on top. And Liverpool are always capable of doing what they did with the players that they've got. For me, you know, Salah. No, Salah is I think he's off as well.
Yeah, just been replaced by Origi. Salah.
Origi, yeah.
A game again that shows we know the attacking talent. We can talk about Roberto Firmino, but at the other end, like the signing of Alisson, probably not quite at the level of Virgil van Dijk, it seems, when we talk about the game changers for Liverpool over the last 2 years, but he has made two or three massive saves when Wolves were really on top.
You don't win anything with a dodgy goalkeeper. Mm. Goalkeepers have to be saving you points like he has done. And don't forget, over the last few years, they didn't have a goalkeeper, didn't have van Dijk, didn't have Robertson in. And left. Like, no, that's three players that they put into Gomez, again, wasn't in the team. Like, that's four of the five players, and we've got Alexander as well. So it's a whole new defence to what he had in the dodgy days, you know, when sometimes it'd be two up and they draw 2-2 or lose the game. They don't concede many goals now. They've got a really, really good back five defensive players now.
Roberto Firmino's goal is 10th Premier League goal of the season. All 10 of them away from home.
Yeah. Well, he's the, you know, I find him the workhorse of the trio. You know, he's the one that does a lot of the donkey work. You know, Salah scores his goal, Mane scores his goals in a spectacular way. But without him, Nathan, they wouldn't be scoring the goals that they're scoring. He's a good maker of goals. He's a good link-up man between the back, the midfield and the front. He's not as spectacular as these guys. He doesn't score as many. But he scores valuable ones.
Mm. And he just missed a good chance. It was a good save from the keeper just a couple of minutes before that. He had a really good chance.
Well, 10 goals. I mean, it's a good thing when you see somebody scoring 10 goals away from home rather than 10 goals at home where they're probably winning much easier. In other words, I think the goals he scored, if you look back on them, would be really, really important goals. It wouldn't be the fourth goal in a 4-0 win.
We're probably already past the stage where, you know, Manchester City are watching this and getting deflated because I'd imagine they know that the league is wrapped up, but like every single week when you're in games and like half a dozen games in the last few months where Liverpool have maybe looked vulnerable at times in the last 20 minutes and just pop up and score a winner.
Yeah, I'd say definitely City have given up on it now. Mm. They're not going to crack up Liverpool. You know, they can afford to lose one or two matches and they mightn't even do that because you get to a stage where, you know, people often talk about the pressure last year of Liverpool not winning the league for a long time. Actually, there's no pressure on them at all now.
Yeah, and they actually have a very favourable run of fixtures after this. The next four or five league games are ones you would expect them to go and win against teams in the bottom half of the table.
Yeah. Well, they're winning against the top teams anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Speaking of Liverpool, whenever we say you're coming in for a longer chat, the one question that comes up time and time again, John, the one thing people want to talk about, and I know you've spoken about it before, punching Kevin Keegan.
Well, that was in
that was his fault, wasn't it?
The Champions. It was in the
Charity Shield.
What was called the Charity Shield. I think that was 1974.
Yeah.
Kevin. Well, Kevin was a terrific player. I mean, he got Liverpool back on track really when he came to the club. He was a terrific player. But that day on the Charity Shield. What was the Charity Shield? He seemed to be in a bit of a mood.
Right.
You know, I know the ball went to Norman Hunt, and he wasn't very unlike him. He had a go at Norman Hunt, and then the ball broke, and he had a go at Billy, and then it broke again, and I got onto it, going towards Terry Cooper, and he was all over me, you know, over the back of me, down the backs of my legs, over the top of me. He was in a bit of a temper, and I shouldn't have done what I did. He let him come past me, and I actually did hit him. You know, he was down.
Oh, you hit him.
And lucky enough, Matthewson was the referee, and I'd played it, you know. He was. I got on well with him, and he came up and I said, "Sorry about that," you know, and he let me off. But look, there was a few Liverpool players around. They didn't say anything. I think Kevin was in.
Might have sensed as well that there was just something up at him.
Up at him, and maybe they thought like it. Maybe he was a bit moody, and they might have thought, "Well, you deserve to get that."
Because there was obviously an incident later in the game with Billy Bremner then and Kevin Keegan and. Where they do get sent off. But I was watching it back earlier on, your memory can get mixed up at times. I was expecting, once you thump him, that there's all-out war, that there's a full-scale riot. But actually, as you say, it just happens, everyone's quite calm about it.
Yeah, there was, especially Liverpool players, because normally it'd be over and they'd be telling the referees. It didn't happen. I was surprised, only looking back on it. But what happened then was, this was like 10 minutes after my particular incident, but he was in a mood, Kevin. You know, he was a good lad, he was a terrific player, but he was definitely in a mood that day. And there was a free kick for them, it might have been on him. And like, we had a bit of a policy, Remner and myself, that if you're in trouble with somebody and it was a free kick, swap over with them. You know what I mean? Like, it was a free kick into the penalty box for Liverpool. And he said to me, because he used to call me a wee man, "I'll take him."
Right.
Right. So Billy would have been giving him a bit of verbal. And Kevin lost the head and started punching. So they finished up in a fight.
Yeah.
Right? So the referee came out and sent the two of them off. But what happened, which...
You're standing there laughing, going, "How did I get away with that?"
I wasn't laughing about it. But what happened was the two of them were sent off. And Kevin was walking down the touchline and took his jersey off and threw it on the ground. So Billy was following him. He took his jersey off and threw it down. Now, I was blamed because I was always, anyway, I was playing at Anfield again, I got it right going over with the crowd because I was blamed
for Keegan up.
I had nothing to do with the sending off situation and certainly nothing to do with Kevin taking his jersey off.
And do you know if that continued down the tunnel between Bremner and Keegan?
I don't know if it continued down the tunnel.
We were talking earlier on about Johnny Sexton taking over the captaincy and Rory Best and how good Best was with referees.
Yeah.
Is that what saved you? Had you a certain charm when it came to referees?
Well, yeah, as I said, I'd been playing for a few, I don't know, I was 33 at the time, I would have been playing for a few years with the Matthews and the referee. And luckily enough, I said, "Sorry about that." I held my hands up. But any time I went to Anfield, I got a right going over at Anfield, yeah.
Well, they're going to be happy at Anfield again, or happy on Merseyside, because Liverpool have gone 16 points clear at the top of the Premier League. 14 straight wins, 40 games unbeaten. They've left it late to beat Wolves by 2-1. Roberto Firmino with the winner, 5 minutes from time. We'll take a quick break.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
So Liverpool's march towards the title continues, but this probably their toughest game of the season. They left it late to beat Wolves by 2-1 at Molineux. Jordan Henderson and Roberto Firmino with the goals. Firmino just 5 minutes from time. John Giles, thank you very much for staying in with us.
Thank you, Nathan.
Liverpool going to win the league? prediction you're willing to give.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right, you can listen to the football show back on offtheball.com. Our daily sports breakfast show is back tomorrow morning, 7:30 in the morning. You can get it on all our social channels and listen on OTB Sports Radio via the Go Loud app. Adrian Anone on OTB AM. They're going to have Jason Quigley on the show. He's fighting in California tonight, 3 a.m. Irish time, so we'll be on after that. Andy Dunn and Gary Breen as well. We're back on the radio tomorrow night at 7:00. Tommy Walsh still basking in the glow of Tullerone's victory at the weekend. Clean O'Connor and Billy Joe Padden also on the show. And we'll have trainer James Nash, who's going to be on Friday Night Racing with Jer and Tom Malone. That is us done for tonight. Tom Dunn's up next. Good luck.
Paddy Power. as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.